Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to a new redefining technology podcast. Standing on 2 feet, having dexterous hands, developing a language that allows us to communicate, and the ability to understand abstract concepts. These are all part of the equation of humanity. Still, it is the capacity to create tools and advance the technology that has allowed us to thrive on this planet, and maybe on others. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. Blue Lava is the first business platform for CISOs to manage their security program. Blue Lava guides security leaders to effectively measure, optimize, and communicate their security program with confidence and ease in one platform. Learn more at bluelava.net.
Marco.
Sean, are you there or not?
I am here. And we actually joke about this on a few episodes back, whether it was virtual Sean or the real Sean joining an episode. I'll be real today.
You'll be real?
There's going to be plenty of virtual talk, I think.
Yes, and that's exactly, you know, we always start with some kind of a joke and a little like mind bending and making people think, where are they going today? Well, we're going today. We're going to go in that line between what is true and what is real and what is non-real, what is virtual, what is magic. I don't know. Maybe it's magic. What do you think,
always,
Sean?
It's always magic.
If you don't have the answer, it's magic. That got it. But no, we're going to talk about a very interesting topic. And the podcast channel today is Redefining Technology. And I don't think there is much that is refining technology so much like virtual reality, extended reality, augmented reality, and how we're interacting with, another dimension. I always like to think about that way. Sean, but we of course don't know anything.
I certainly don't know anything. And the other thing that comes to mind beyond magic is, does this happen purposefully or by accident? Do we stumble across something that opens our mind to say, oh wow, if I could just take that and do this with it? Or are we looking for something specific? And I suspect there's a little of both in there, but we're going to find out hopefully about this and all of it from our guest, Regis Copper. Regis, thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And I have a first question. Are you real?
Are you real?
I am real. I'm flesh and bones right here.
Very nice.
Very good. And you are an assistant professor at the Department of Computer Science, UNC Greensboro. And so we're going to go back in time, Sean, and go to school again in college. And we're going to hear we're going to see if we can learn something today. So I would say, first of all, what we want to learn about is a little bit about you, Regis, a little introduction about yourself, what you're doing, your research, and what we're going to talk about today.
All right. Yes. So I'm, as you said, my work is with computer science, but where I put myself personally, because in the specific research area that I work on, is in the frontier of psychology and computer science. Because what I do is, at the broad level, is human-computer interaction. And the human really is underlined here, because if we are designing, my work also relates a lot to design. Development is a tool, but design really is the goal. And when we're designing for humans, which are people who operate computers, who operate machines, we need to understand humans in order to end up with good solutions. So that's I have this. A lot of my research really is very close to experimental psychology and understanding people. Most of the time, what my research boils down to is to bring people into my lab to participate in user studies to evaluate the techniques and tools and applications that, that we create. So yeah, that's kind of a very high level view of my work. Specifically, I'm interested in user experience factors in virtual and augmented reality, what I call extended reality, which is all of these advanced display interactive technologies that that have become prominent over the past decade or so, I would say. And even though research-wise, we've been working a lot longer than that. And I work with issues of interaction, specifically how can we make interaction more intuitive or more effective in virtual environments or in augmented situations. I also work with comfort. For the ones of you who have tried VR before, chances are that there has been some degree of discomfort that may be from fitting the devices, but a lot of times it deals with dizziness, nausea, and we have some physiological limitations as humans, which are very consistent with and analogous to motion sickness, except for these are is visual induced motion sickness. So I work on how can we come up with techniques, typically visual techniques, that help reduce this natural discomfort that we may experience in VR. And also, I work a lot with VR applications for specific domain types or domain areas. Specifically, recently, I've been working with public safety and using virtual reality as a simulation platform for user interfaces and for processes in public safety in all areas, police, law enforcement, firefighting, and EMS. And can we use VR to simulate and train for that? But also, can we use VR to foresee what next generation interfaces may look like, and then using VR as a simulation platform for future augmented reality once the technology becomes available. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about a little bit about some of these things that I've been working on.
And thankfully, Marco, we have about 6 hours for this episode to cover all that.
Virtually, yes. Let's see how we can morph and squeeze time.
Let's scratch the surface and see where we go. Because early days in some of my software development, we had some user groups and we did some studies, and there's a lot of psychology involved for simple things like a user interface for a desktop application. And the goal was simple in that, what do we want the user to do and how do we make that comfortable and get them to do that or eliminate mm-hmm. some of the discomfort and perhaps even do something for them if they're not likely to do it on their own. How does that relate to the work that you're doing? Is it really to help mm-hmm. people through a process, or is it to let them guide their own way through things?
Yes, it's very related in that we are bringing people onto the lab to evaluate tools and techniques, which means we want to test, we want to see whether, because as you just mentioned, when you were developing these user interfaces, you brought people in to ensure that your plan actually works, right? And what you had in mind for the usability and the effectiveness of your user interface, does that really match up to what you end up seeing with users? So yes, it's very similar, but I would say that with extended reality, this is even more crucial because there aren't standards as there are with desktop computing. So in desktop computing, we have standards dating back to the 70s, for example, with keyboard, mouse, menus, and the pointer, all of that is it's pretty standardized, and whether you use a Windows computer or a Mac computer, it's very much consistent throughout. You are going to use a cursor that you're going to use with a mouse or a touchpad, but that cursor is mapped linearly. The movement of the mouse is mapped linearly to the movement of the cursor, and everything is really constrained. And I used to say that in user interface design, constraints are actually really positive things. We want to have constraints because they keep us from doing things that are outside the scope of the task. When we move to a spatial environment that may be immersive and have an unrestricted input, meaning that you have a device that is tracked with 6 degrees of freedom, meaning that the system knows its position and orientation in space, it's really powerful because it can do much more with it. But it's also much easier to do bad stuff and do things that aren't very natural. So we want to constrain, to create constraints that are going to make them easier, more intuitive. So for example, if you have a slider that you need to control, I don't know, for whatever reason, you are selecting the level that you want in a virtual reality game or something like that through a slider. There is no reason why you would have a three-dimensional cursor to do that. So you constrain that slider to a one-dimensional line so that even though you can move your hand freely, that slider is only going to move in that direction. But coming up with these things, and as interactions become more complex, for example, with training, there's a lot of things that we need to consider. When you're training for a physical task, for example, we want transfer, which means we want the training to the effect of the training to be consistent to the effect of the real world application. So we need to think well about the constraints, because then we have also limitations within VR. The most obvious perhaps is haptics that we don't have. We don't have the sense of touch as we do with physical devices. So how can we simulate that in a way that if you're learning, you're learning it in a correct way and still, when you're practicing, that helps, as opposed to we come up with a magic. You guys talked about magic early on, and that's really appropriate, because there's a lot of magic with VR. You can fly, you can go very far, you can teleport, you can do a lot of things with VR. There are magic, and there are a lot of applications for that. But some applications, you actually need to reduce or eliminate the magic and have high fidelity techniques that approach the performance of the real life counterpart with simulation and training specifically.
So as we are right here, I think it's a good time to maybe, you know, go backward a little bit, and for those that are listening, maybe clarify in a very, you know, high level way the difference mm-hmm. between a virtual reality environment and augmented reality environment, so that when we go to the next questions, which is maybe user interface and what drives what, we can pinpoint what we're talking about.
Yes, no, that's very important. And there is some confusion. So, and these are buzzwords that a lot of people use a lot of times now because they are buzzwords. We can separate virtual reality, augmented reality, and the real world, and we can put them in a continuum. This is called the Milgram Continuum, and it was proposed back in the 90s. It's very simple. In one end of this continuum, you can think of it as a line. In one end of this line, you have the real world. Everything is tangible. You can see, and everything that you see is real and physical, and they exist in the real world. At the other end of the spectrum, you have virtual reality. Theoretically, everything is virtual. Everything that you experience through your senses is generated by a computer. It's generated by digital means. And then in the anywhere between the both ends of the continuum, we have what Milgram called mixed reality, which also a lot of times now has been used to express exclusively augmented reality. But mixed reality is nothing more than some component of your experience comes from the real world, some components come from a digital system. And then within that, we have augmented virtuality, which we're not gonna talk about today. There isn't a whole lot of application, but then we have augmented reality. And augmented reality is when you augment or you enhance the real world with digital information. So think of your working environment being the real world. But then you can add virtual stuff. You can have virtual objects. You can have virtual displays. So then you have augmented reality. So the essential difference between virtual reality and augmented reality is that in virtual reality, this is another term that we use a lot, immersion. You are immersed in a virtual world. And with this new virtual reality displays, they have quite wide fields of view, which means that you cover a lot of your view field with the virtual information, and you can actually feel like you are in a different place when you put this on. And this is called the feeling of presence. With augmented reality, what you're doing is you're immersed in the real world, just like we are right now, but you have information on top of it that is virtual. So for example, a good example of an augmented reality idealized application is if you can think of a dashboard in the car, or even the windshield, that shows you the directions within the road at the correct depth, at the correct positioning, so that you don't have to divide your attention between the GPS map and the road. You have right there virtual signs. So these are virtual information onto the real world. So this is augmented reality. And then just to finalize, extended reality is a term that I've been using, some people use to qualify or describe any type of display that is between augmented reality and virtual reality, any of these new technologies.
And is there multi-reality? Multi-reality? And I ask that question because I'm thinking how, kind of bringing it back to the mind of the human, how much can we take as a human? I mean, we know where our physical world is, but you're talking about layers of data and metadata and activity and senses. And can we?
Yeah, this is a great question. Yeah, so there is a lot of research, highly psychology-based research that looks at understanding people's behavior in virtual environments and more recently in augmented environments. And what I can tell you is that humans are very adaptable, and we can very easily start behaving just normally as we would in a real situation when we are in a virtual environment. And this is really powerful because you can create a digital experience there are a lot of uses, right? We can talk about ethical issues as well if we want to go there, but let's talk a little about the positive ones. So we know that just humans are naturally biased, and we all know in the world how what may happen with that, with all of this profiling that happens by police and all of that. So we can use virtual environments, and people have, to try and raise awareness about implicit bias, about preconceived notions that exist just by human nature, so that you can be aware of those and then avoid making decisions based on those. And virtual environments are safe to do that because you are in a safe environment. You can use that for PTSD therapy as well, for example. So it's safe, it's replicable, you can repeat as many times as you want, but this only works because when you are in a virtual environment, you end up very quickly, in a matter of minutes, behaving towards, let's say, a virtual character in front of you, a virtual human, the same way that you would, or in a consistent way to the way you would behave to a similar person in the real world.
Yeah, and then maybe we are good at that because we're already living in a virtual reality, in the matrix, and we don't know.
So exactly.
That's another philosophical question. I find it very interesting, and I follow the idea, you know, that Sean had at the beginning. Maybe we should go for 7-8 hours on this. let's see if we can bring it to maybe some important topics now, and who knows, maybe we'll have more conversation about this. let's talk about the application of this, right? So mm-hmm. you say, of course, there is the interface. In order to have the interface, you need something that actually works well, because what you could create a few years ago, technology goes really fast. It's a completely different story now. You can be completely immersed and it's going to get better. I personally was talking to a friend of ours, Antonia Forster in the UK, that she does a lot of research in this. And I told her, I have an issue because I get car sick. And every time you mention, every time I try to put the goggles on, I just feel sick. So she's like, well, how long ago did you do it? And I'm like, I don't know. It was maybe a few years ago. And then I didn't try again. And she's like, well, you know, it is advanced. Maybe you want to give it a try again because it's better. Because I want to experience that. But apart from the fun and the gaming and visiting a virtual museum or whatever it is, what is now that you see really a game changer for our society? I mean, you mentioned training, psychological mm-hmm. condition, reconditioning, and what else? I mean, where are we yeah. going with this?
So, yeah, this is a great question. And I preface this with the fact that critics and any, I mean, it's a fair criticism that VR may be a fad and it may come and go just like a lot of video games do. Right. And with video games, I think that's really, it's bound to happen. I mean, the Wii is a great example and a lot of video games, because the novelty effect goes away. So what we, but I'm not afraid of that for VR, because once we have serious applications for that and we see added value, it's going to stay. There's a business use for it. So absolutely, I think VR has already demonstrated that has a lot of application. I would put in the first level, even though I already talked about it, and maybe that's why I talked about it early on, I think simulation and training has a lot of potential. Training for soft skills, psychological training, and training for interpersonal relationships or interpersonal management. But it's getting to a point where we have evidence from research that it also can be effective for more physical training. And that's where also augmented reality comes in. So imagine a training and guided operation as well with augmented reality, where you're wearing some lightweight glasses, just normal glasses, which they're going to become available. They are still devices are kind of bulky, but they're going to be miniaturized and we're going to wear them just like we were glasses now. With augmented reality, you can be operating some machinery, and you can look at guidance and labels and instructions as you're doing that. I think that's really a great potential for augmented reality, and there's so much investment that's being done there already. With virtual reality, there's the first real application of VR back from the 90s. That has been used clinically ever since is for psychotherapy uses, especially phobia treatment, exposure treatment. I mentioned PTSD. All of this VR can be really powerful because the immersion it provides and the sense of presence that it elicits. So if you are afraid of heights, you can get into a virtual pit that is really deep below you, and you're going to sweat, you're going to have physiological responses to that, even though you are in a safe environment. And then training at a higher level, I think virtual reality has a lot of potential. There's a lot of this that still needs to be verified experimentally, and that's mostly because these things are difficult to measure, and the technology is rather new, but I think there's a lot of benefit to creating simulations. Some of the work that I've been doing with public safety is exactly for that, for having a simulation of the process. So this is kind of between physical and the more psychological training, but we have developed a firefighting simulation where you have a team of firefighters getting into a burning building. And how do you coordinate once you get there? And how can you use next generation technology to see through walls and see where your teammates are, find the exit routes and things like that? So these are all, I think, very applications with a lot of potential. And one thing just to wrap up this point is that we are really at the dawn of this moment with virtual reality. So there's a lot of opportunity to get in. There is, of course, a lot of risk because the technology is still incipient, but there's a lot of opportunity to start working on these areas.
So it's a long dawn, Regis, because you've been doing a lot of work in this space. I think I said before 2006. How have things changed from a research perspective? Mm-hmm. And I'm envisioning when we talk about artificial intelligence, I mean, it's something so grand that can do so much, but today it's really, it can do certain things really well. And so yeah. I'm wondering, has the progress for virtual reality research started with individual, very specific things? And have we reached the part where a point where the solution is good yeah. enough, or are we still in individual parts?
No, we are. I would say that the solution is good enough already. And now it's a matter of generating content, designing and creating techniques to put the technology to use. But yeah, let's have a little history lesson here. So I started, as I said, around the mid 2000s, but virtual reality has initially been proposed in 1968. Well, actually 1965 by Ivan Sutherland. He came up with a paper. It was just a short one-page paper that he presented at a computer conference from back then that was called The Ultimate Display. And he had the perfect vision of virtual reality, even though he didn't call it virtual reality back then. But the biggest what it approaches the most that I can think of in terms of popular culture is the holodeck. But he had that vision. And 3 years later, he implemented the first virtual reality display, which was also an augmented reality display because you could see through it. And it was fully tracked. It had, of course, very primary graphics. But 1968 is as far back as we go. And then, of course, we had in the 90s, we had a big boom and expectations of VR, which turned out not to come to fruition. Essentially because the technology wasn't ready yet. And there was a big commercial flop with the Nintendo Virtual Boy, which didn't help. So people, companies, the industry became quite afraid. And then you move forward to the 2000s and you have the Oculus introduction and then the Facebook acquisition. That really has put the commercial aspect of virtual reality in the scene, and it stayed ever since. So Facebook purchased the Oculus, a startup, for a couple billion dollars, I believe, and that's really what started. Now, research-wise, from the early 1990s, actually the first international virtual reality conference happened in 1989. There's been a lot of activity in research since then. And basically, everything was much more expensive and worked much more poorly in terms of the specifications, the quality of the hardware. But there was a lot of research activity happening since the 90s into the 2000s. And that really set the stage for once the technology caught up for the applications to come, because a lot of the lead work had been done. So what caused this dawn of virtual reality, as I spoke, really was the advent of mobile displays, mobile phones, and that really dropped the cost a lot and allowed devices that when I did my my studies, my research, my formative research, a head-mounted display that was equivalent to something that's like $5 that you snap to your phone used to cost between $10,000 and $15,000, and now we have an amazing device, for example, the Oculus Quest, which is completely self-contained, doesn't need a large workstation. That was just the device. You needed a computer to drive that and all that. But now you have a self-contained device, for example, the Oculus Quest, which you can get for $300 and is so much more powerful than what we would have there. That did not limit so much the research, because with the research you can create things with this suspension of disbelief and just assuming that the technology will get there one day. And so the research has been really active throughout. It's still really active. Now it's more active than before, essentially because there are more application people joining the virtual reality research community, meaning that we have a lot of in the VR community, specifically the IEEE virtual reality conference community, which is my home conference. We have a lot of application-oriented tracks where you have, for example, naval people coming up and presenting papers on applications that they have developed, or electric grid applications. All of these are being developed, and then we are basically incorporating other domains into the VR research because these have become possible. Essentially, until the 2010 or so, a lot of the research has been much more on developing the groundwork for these other applications to exist, meaning what are interaction techniques that we can use that now you go onto any VR game that you download, they use those. Like, how do you navigate around? How do you pick up objects? How do you move around? How do you control menus, enter text? All of this has been done over the past 30 years or so.
Well, I really appreciate the history lesson here, because we just look at, well, this is what it is, and we don't think about how did we get here. And one of the things that I like to wrap the conversation with this is, just because we have to draw a line the half an hour or so, and sure, and maybe you'll come back and we can talk more, but I like your perspective from the point of view as a researcher of what drives the research, what drives the development, and why are we doing this? And I'm kind of going to the beginning of the meaning of this channel, redefining technology. So is technology that drives humanity, or humanity is that drive technology? Probably something in between the real world and the virtual world continuum that you were mentioning before.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I love your perspective on this.
Absolutely. I think it's both. I think humanity drives technology, and technology will just naturally drive humanity. What I think is really important, and the reason why I do research, and why a lot of people who are doing research in the same lines that I have been doing, the reason why we're doing that is really to allow practitioners, allow guys like you, guys who are in the industry, to use the technology to drive humanity. So questions that we look at are, how can we come up with a tool that will make people more comfortable in VR, or they will reduce the risk of feeling motion sick, which is a common side effect of VR. So can we come up with some tools that allow that? How can we move around in a virtual world in a efficient yet natural way that you feel as if it's a second nature to you, but still gets you in within the virtual environment to the places that you need to be while maintaining your spatial understanding? Because anyone can teleport anywhere in a blink of an eye, right? But is it important for me to know where I have been and how to get back and all of this? So we look at these questions, and really what we want is to drive the state of the art so that next generation applications can use the tools and techniques that we have been creating in order to develop their own applications and be sure that they will be usable and efficient. So I don't know if that answers, but that's kind of
It is. And the short answer is greed drives it.
Yeah, I like everything, I think humanity is where it is because of a lot of that, because of greed. We need to be greedy, but to the right amount.
Exactly. And I'm joking a bit there, of course, but I think so many questions in my head. You just talked about teleportation, and I mean, all of this has been us physically in a world being somewhere else virtually in our mind. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if the future holds some other transport. I don't know. It's just so big, this space. I could spend hours chatting.
We can spend hours, and there is we can only talk up until the foreseeable future, but beyond that, I think it's really limitless. We have no idea where it's going, but it certainly is changing, and we will continue to change the way that we live in the world.
This is couldn't be a more appropriate time to do that. I mean, since when this world has been upheld a little bit for the pandemic, mm-hmm. and, you know, our conference has become Zoom conference and video conference. And I started looking into this, you know, idea of using holograms to be meeting people. I've read about wearing certain suits where you have this augmented reality and you have actually the possibility to touch someone, and like, why are you going to travel for 3 days to do a half an hour talk on the other side of the world where you could just wear this suit, be there, people can see you, you can actually interact with that. And then at that point, what is real, what is not, it becomes almost like online versus offline society. There's not that line anymore. So, and it gets really tech, but it also gets really psychological, philosophical to who are we really? Are we our experience or what we can really do physically? And so
absolutely.
I could invite you if you want to have this conversation next time.
I'll be happy to. Absolutely. Yes. I've been catching up to Westworld recently. And, that has a lot of that, but yes. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I think these all these questions are important, and some asking these questions I think are important beyond even our lifetimes, because things are going to go in directions that where these philosophical questions are going to be inevitable.
Wonderful. Well,
I think if all we have to worry about is a bit of motion sickness, then we're doing all right. But I suspect there's much more to consider. Regis, I'm thrilled to have you on and to have this conversation. As Marco and I say, if we get people to think, we've done our job. I know I'm certainly spinning a mile a minute now. Hopefully others are as well. And yeah, hopefully more conversations, societal, psychological, ethical, wherever we can go, we can certainly do that. Then I want to appreciate you bringing to bear your research and your perspective on virtual augmented extended reality.
Yeah, and please share with us some resources about, you know, the history, and we'll put it on the podcast. So for all the people listening right now that want to dig a little deeper in what's been this conversation, we will share these in the podcast notes. And Regis, thank you so much again, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Yes, thank you very much for having me again.
Blue Lava is the first business platform for CISOs to manage their security program. Blue Lava guides security leaders to effectively measure, optimize, and communicate their security program with confidence and ease in one platform. Learn more at bluelava.net. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Redefining Technology Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.